Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this down track.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance.
Okay,
we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot del H. I'm going around the horn. Make your go-no-goes based on the data you had prior to LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue PDI.
Coming to you live from the slopes of the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country and in the paranormally active shadow of Mount Rainier, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your hosts, John Almada and Kat Lang.
American when I hear that. Just feel damned American. And this is another edition of Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, and we've been off the air a couple of weeks, but by God, we're here and America is still here. Right, Kat?
That's right.
Okay. So, hey, it's the All-American Show. Much delayed, but we're still here kicking, and we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff tonight. It's just sort of a get our feet back in the door kind of show. We're going to talk about ghosts of everything from Rudolph Valentino to ghosts of the Washington, D.C., and all-American ghosts, ghosts of Hollywood, you know, anything that has to do with America. It's kind of open season. We're just going to talk about some of these famous cases and our own experiences and things we've heard and seen with regard to all of this. And so we're just kind of, you know, walk you through, and, you know, maybe if you've got stories in the chat rooms. By the way, speaking of chat rooms, before we go on any further, Kat was telling me they were having trouble with some of the chat rooms. So just in case we are having some issues there, we have our backup chat room over at the GRI website. And I took the liberty on our front page of making the chat link really big, so it's easy to see. So if you have to go there, then come on in. And I see Tuna Fish has already made it. Yeah, so I wonder who that could be. Oh, yes, it would just be wonderful to find out the first names of these people. Oh, yes. So that said, Kat, I heard you had a famous guest on, if not today, probably soon. Would that be a certain Brian?
That's Brian Harnoy from Ghost Hunters International. He's on my show Monday night.
All right. So we're going to have a really famous person there. And what time is that going to be on?
That's 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, 8 o'clock Eastern. He's doing Shocks Paracore conference this weekend and will not be available until Monday. So, and then I start with the regular Sunday show with my lineup of fun and interesting people. I've got the Villisca Axe Murder House people on, and G.P. Haggart, who's a demonologist, and then Alan's going to be back. Carla wants to be on it. And I got lots of shows coming.
All right. Same here. We've got our lineups pretty much in place. Been getting we've got some paranormal authors coming on. Don't have the names right in front of me because I'm in the reserve studio. But we've also got Gloria Young from Ghost Trackers is going to be on in the coming weeks, and just a host of folks. So, we're also going to have the owner of Wolf Manor, Todd Wolf, is going to be on to talk to us about what's all things Wolf Manor-ish. So we've got the same kind of lineup going on, and you know, we'll be trading back and forth talking about our guests. So, but today, let's see what we've got here in terms of news. And I kind of went back a little bit because we're going to because of the shows that we kind of missed out on because of various reasons, and believe me, there were many. So I'm just going to kind of harken back to this set of news stories. What we have here is from Cher, and it's from July 3rd of this year. Miami Town's first ever paranormal convention here on the Paranormal News for the week. So this is out in Cincinnati, I guess. Cincinnati tour founders bring the paranormal community together. So the Miami Historical Society of Whitewater Township and Miami Ghost Tours are coming together to bring the first paranormal community get-together into Cincinnati. So Ghost Tour founders Michael and Jeff Morris will be hosting the first convention in Miami Town, Ohio, on October 10th, 2009. And so they've got quite a lineup here. I'm not going to read everything on this show but that they've got set up. But it's going to be admission is a really affordable $5. Thank God, Yahoo, they're finally starting to understand there's an economic crisis going on. And all proceeds will be donated to the Miami Historical Society. I always want to say Historical Society. In order to help Miami Town grow and become what it once was, the doors will open at 2 p.m. and presentations will begin about 3 p.m. Convention will last 6 hours, doors closing about 8 o'clock. So if you want to see that link, go to the GRI webpage and click on the big microphone image, and then you'll just you can scroll in and see the link for this particular item. We'll jump over here to Kinzua Dam, a paranormal hotbed, and this is from our good friends over at the San Francisco Examiner. This is by Pastor Swope, a Pittsburgh paranormal examiner guy, I guess, and he's talking about In 1796, Seneca War Chief Complantor was granted 15,000 acres along the Allegheny River by Pennsylvania for his assistance to the state as a loyal and steadfast protector of American families settling in the wilderness of the upper Ohio River Basin. In what would become the oldest standing Indian treaty, George Washington granted the land to Chief Complantor and his ancestors forever. Forever ended in 1965, however, when the completed Kinzua Dam flooded the Allegheny River and covered the ancestral lands of the Seneca leader. Their homes, their only viable farmland, and the graves of their ancestor are now under hundreds of feet of water. Despite petitions from the tribal leaders to JFK and to stop the proposal, the proposed dam in 1960, the president and the United States broke the longest-standing treaty between the government and the native tribes of North America. And so they were all relocated to new areas, and they dug up quite a few of the people and planted them in a new area. But to this day, the Seneca claim that not only was the removal itself a vile act of desecration, but there are still some missing tribal graves under the flooded waters of the Allegheny. And even the bones of Complantor himself were allegedly treated with irreverence and disrespect, leading some who witnessed the desecration to believe that perhaps not all the remains of the historic chief were reinterred. So this goes on to talk about the whole set of events that go on here. But there's also many other paranormal events, a UFO landing in Presque Isle. I'm not sure quite where that's at, but it must be nearby. And there's a lot of strange sightings that have been seen of a lake creature at the Kinzua. And they've heard a report from a park ranger that says dam divers have had harrowing encounters with a very large snake-like creature within the last year. There was video supposedly shown by the Army Corps of Engineers to some government officials of the creatures in Lake Perfliti. The executive told me that the neck of the creature they had on tape was massive, and it was almost 2 feet thick. The tape was made by divers as they were doing maintenance on the dam itself, and it showed some monstrous fish near the bottom of Lake Perfliti as well. I was told by divers, where divers have resorted to working in cages since they inspect the dam and fear that there's unknown aquatic creatures and car-sized catfish that might mistake them for a possible snack. And so this article goes on, a car-sized catfish, imagine that. Well, a catfish. Hey, wait a minute. You're a news cat. this is just amazing. I mean, there's a lot going on in this place. Let me see if it goes. One woman named Becky, who lives in the area, writes, "My friend and I have seen that monster from the first Jake's Rock Outlook. It was about 7 years ago, maybe the summer of 2000. Looked to me like the Loch Ness Monster type of creature. Did not see the head, but I think it was the middle body area, and it was in the water between the actual concrete dam and the buoys that people cannot swim or boat beyond. If you're standing at the shale beach, mind you, the karst on the Jake's Rocks over there look like matchbox cars. This thing was huge," so she's talking in relation to the cars. Wow. So they're evidently seeing this thing, and it's like a Monster Quest episode waiting to be filmed there in Ohio. So anyway, go see this story. And they get into a little bit of your favorite guy, Bigfoot there, Kat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot going on in Ohio, more than we ever thought. It's not just WKRP in Cincinnati. There's some stuff going down there. So we'll jump on from there. And so, again, you can go see that story, Kinzua Dam, Kinzua Dam, if you want to search it on Google. The orb phenomena, this is another Examiner story. Is it real or is it paranormal? And, you know, I'm not going to read too much of this, but let's see what the gist of this is here. This guy is believing there's some credence to orbs, and I tend to agree to that. I think that there's maybe 10 to 15% of the orbs that we do get on digital cameras or film.
Mm-hmm.
Or even video are, in fact, spirit, or representative of spirit. Most of it, though, is going to be your traditional, dust and water in the air and explainable things like that. So that this article is pretty good. He goes into things like backscatter, how viewing orbs in different light spectrums. There's three categories of that need to be assigned to groups and individuals that are looking and quantifying these photographs, and they are actual researchers, scientific types, hobbyists, and pure skeptics. And so, by and large, I'm sure that the biggest one is the hobbyist, because there's just so many people doing this kind of work, but they're not truly trained. So it, you know, kind of my take on this story is that it would behoove people to really get into, if they do suspect they have a true spirit orb, to have it analyzed by somebody who really knows what they're doing. So you've done some orb photography, haven't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
What have you picked up?
Oh, I get orbs on a sunny day, and I've gotten 4 full-body apparitions, and I would tend to agree that not all orbs are orbs. They're rain, snow, you know, dust, bugs. But when you catch the orbs like I have in broad daylight, and they're clearly... there's nothing else that they could be, then I think that they're just like every other photograph. There's always going to be a skeptic out there that's going to say no freaking way. Then there's always going to be somebody that'll take the middle road that'll say, okay, it might be this. Then, of course, you always have the people that just automatically say that it's this. But I think there are things that you can not dispute, and I think I have clearly some of those photographs that I've personally taken that I've shown to some clear skeptics, and after explaining to them what was going on and where I was, and since they know that I'm a sensitive and a summoner, they tend to agree that it's probably a ball of energy given off by a ghost or a spirit. So I do believe they exist. I think if we discount orbs totally and completely without opening up our minds and investigating them, then I mean, what are we really doing?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's funny because when we went to the Virginia City investigation, I actually had a sighting of a half-bodied apparition. I mean, I saw a pair of legs running, but there was no torso on top, and this thing was running from the mine where we were just staying outside of, in what they call the miner's cabin there at the Gold Hill Hotel. And shortly thereafter, two of our investigators came to me and were in the same exact spot looking in the same very same direction and came to me and were all excited. And I said, what's going on? And they said, we saw blue orbs. And it was kind of weird because for the last several cases we've been on, we've been seeing blue orbs. And I've never heard of any such thing like that, so I'm not sure if you've run into stuff like that in your travels or if any of our other listeners have, but if it seems like that this is something either new or some, I guess, spiritual fad, if you will, you know, that these things are being seen, and I'd like to know why or what the heck they could be. So we're, you know, that came up in our team meeting today. We were talking about that going, well, what could this be all about? So we're going to be researching that and seeing what we can find. But if anybody else has had a spate of these sorts of experiences, definitely get in contact with us because we'd like to hear more, you know, about you, what you've seen or have heard of, or what you theorize it could be. You know, what this means. So I just think orbs, though, are. It's so easy for people to get excited and think they've got something. You have to have been doing this a while to really kind of make the distinguish, you know, to distinguish it and say, well, gee, it just got done raining. Or, you know, and you know that there's water droplets in the air, that kind of thing. And really be able to quantify what you're really getting. I just have had too many of the photographs I've gotten, especially in places where there was recent activity, that you could tell, you know, hey, this is a little something more, you know. So
I think it also depends on whether you actually felt something when you saw these things. Did you feel Did you get sick? Did you feel apprehensive? Were you happy? Did you feel like you were going to cry? What was the emotion behind seeing that object? Was there any emotion? Was it just like nothing? What, you know?
Shock, I think, would be the case for the people we were. You know, myself, my mouth flew open when I saw that thing running, and it was running at an unearthly speed. I've never seen anything like that. It just, I know I must have been very surprised, but emotionally, just stunned. You're not looking for half an apparition to come, you know, tooling out of a mine. It's just not something you're thinking about. You know, you're looking for EVPs, you know, and to see something like that, just boggles the mind. It was truly an amazing thing. But I think in terms of the other two investigators, you know, with what they saw, they were really happy. It was like they were very touched that they saw that. And the other investigator we had at the bookery, who saw the blue orb that came floating out the back of the store, broad daylight too, by the way, she felt the same way. I think she was pretty surprised, but very happy, I think, to have seen it. And so there's some, I guess the emotion, you could say it would be happiness, you know, that they were happy seeing these things. I don't know.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so, too. But that said, what are we coming up on? Are we coming up on, you know, we got 9 minutes till the break. I got a little something here before we get into the all-American stuff. Decided to load up a few of the better EVPs we picked up from Bodie. And we got some interesting stuff. There was one here where we ran a high-pass filter. One of the problems in Bodie is you get a lot of wind out there. I mean, it's a very windy place. So we got EVPs where there was a lot of noise, and I kind of picked the stuff where it was down to a minimum. But we got quite a few women's voices coming through, which was they seemed to be more of them than the men that were talking, at least. So these are pretty clear. Let's start with this one where this woman says, "Look this way," and see what you think. So here we go. We're going to try this one at 100%. Did you hear that? Yeah, let me boost that up. I didn't quite hear it, but let me, on my system here at home, it's real clear. But yeah, I don't know. Let me try it.
I can hear look, but I'm not sure if it says this way or your way or my way.
Yeah, I'm going to load that up on after the show. I'll load it up for anybody who wants to go listen to it. I'll throw it out on a show link and then just say, hey, EVP's from the show. So I'll load that up on the front page right after we get done. There was another one where this woman says Lucy hired them, and my voice is coming through. Am I hearing sirens?
Yes. I'm sorry. I have to leave my windows wide open. It's 86 degrees here, and there's a rather large fire up the street, so.
Oh, okay. All right. Been a lot of fires up that way lately. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. It's dry as a bone here.
Yike. Anyway, this one in Bodie says, this woman says, Lucy, and then I'm talking, and then you hear hired them. So let's see. We'll try this at 100%. Here we go. It's not the recorder. Did you hear that?
Yeah,
kind of
it's
behind
really,
my voice.
Yeah, it's like a little, it's a mumble almost.
Yeah, that was a lot of what we were getting, and you could tell it was not, and the way they are, all of these were, EVPs were musical. You know, you get a lot of that when you do, you know, you go into particular places. There's like a signature EVP that'll come out of one haunt versus another. And the thing we got here in Bodie was a lot of musically toned voices. They speak musically, which I've heard that kind of thing before, but it was just odd. I'll play it one more time. Here we go. It's not the recorder. Hired them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one where they were kind of chastising us, saying that we were teasing the ghosts, and they said that. And this was actually fairly clear. I hope that translates well here on Blog Talk. So here we go at 100%.
Oh.
Did you hear that?
Wow.
Yeah, let me take it up to 200, and that'll kind of boost it. Don't go teasing ghosts.
Oh.
See, again, the same kind of signature thing, the musical tones in the voice. We got just a ton of this stuff. I still have a few Bookery EVPs. Did I ever play the one from the Bookery where they said evil roast her?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember? Yeah, that was a good one. let me see. Oh, let me save my screen from going dark there. We got one here from Bodhi, rotten. That's all it says. It just says rotten, and it's real loud. Here we'll go with that. Let me play it one more time. Rotten or rot gut.
In Bodhi, you have a lot of prostitutes, a lot of ladies of the night. So,
oh, yeah.
And they were always very boisterous and always willing to talk to anybody. So in death, I believe, in my travels and from listening to the EVPs that I have, you're gonna, if you go to a ghost town, you're gonna get a lot of women that are gonna talk to you.
Yeah, there's one here that kind of supports that. I'll play this at 150%. Let's see what you guys pick up on this. So here we go.
I thought that said all right.
It says hug the girls. Here, let's try it again. And it, you know what's funny is when you play these on Blog Talk, sometimes it'll say different things than what you heard on the original.
Can you loop it?
I can't loop it on Blog Talk, but I could but I'll load it up there. I'll just load up the bunch of these that I put up. And then here's another one that says, I hate them. They have a lot of that there. They hated everything. That was great.
I hate them.
I hate them.
They're probably talking about the boozers. The
yeah,
drifters.
Well, they,
no.
Yeah, I still, and here's one that says Uncle Jess, and this is, it's kind of, it's pretty clear, I think. Let's try this one.
Uncle Jess.
Uncle Jess.
Uncle Jess. You got a lot of southern accents going on in there. Uncle Jess.
Well, it's funny because, you know, if you go around a lot of the pioneer cemeteries out here, you get a lot of people from Missouri, a lot of folks directly from Ireland, you know, Scottish folks that came in directly off the boat. But then you have the Missourians and North Carolina and Southern Carolina folks that came in looking for gold. It seemed like there were regional pockets that just came in here. And when you hit the graveyards, you could see these populations, and it was pretty much by ethnic and racial group in a lot of ways. I mean, you just are kind of struck at you know, the history of the place, that it's kind of like that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what your pioneer graveyards are like up there, but these California, you know, areas are just pretty much the same thing. You see a lot of it. And you're not surprised at all to see Missourians in one section, and then over in another area, here's all these Irish folks, you know, and they kind of all stick together. I guess they stay with their own groups in death too, you know. So,
down there in California, a lot of the cemeteries that you have are pretty much situated right around where this event would have taken place, whereas up here, most of our major graveyards were most of the major families that formed Seattle are buried way off from where they would have lived or stood or conducted their business. So,
yeah, it's here. It's they planted them where they dropped. I mean, kind of like you know, the situation on the property we're on right now with, you know, the three or four graves we have on the property, and you located those two gentlemen. I can't remember the names right off the bat, but
Wayne and James.
I always want to say Frick and Frack. I mean, but Wayne and James.
Wayne and James.
Yeah, and they are kind of rambunctious at times. Things they like to knock on walls and do stuff around here.
Mm-hmm.
They've been quiet. They've been real quiet lately, and I haven't had too much of anything signs of the woman that we occasionally have hot periods with, where she'll show up and do stuff. It's just been all around quiet around here, so we're kind of actually enjoying the break a little bit. Although I do miss them, I have to admit, I like evenings where we'll go along and suddenly you'll hear a voice and it's not earthly and you go, oh, they're back. So hopefully maybe they'll make their presence known and let us know they're doing okay, because I do, kind of have a connection to them. I mean, 30 years living on this property, you have some sort of a feel for it.
And Franny, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Franny, yeah. That's the woman. That's the one who likes to make her presence known. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we are at the half hour, and we're going to do that thing we do. We're going to go ahead, and I think, let me find a good song that
it's time to go pee.
Like. It's time to do that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, let me find, where is that song? I'm looking for the one that Kat likes the most.
I do not know.
You do not know.
You talking about the Bigfoot in the freezer down in Georgia?
I don't know about that. I would never play that again, would I?
Oh my God! Don't even go there.
Here we go. We're gonna take a break, and this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. Oh, no. That ain't right. We're going to change this.
This Bigfoot down in Georgia.
Can they?
That's right.
It's not just a man.
A big hairy man.
Didn't they just make it?
From coast to coast,
coast in color, she's there too.
He's got the mind of the soul.
Oh, yes.
And you can
hunting for big
trail him from really far.
Oh, and goodness gracious me.
I have to deal. I've got a few slay on the boy. Who just did
it? You can take it to the Bigfoot Bank.
Yeah. You can take it to the Bigfoot Bank.
Going back to find.
Going back to find.
The whole place.
Maybe find the Bigfoot still alive.
I can't believe
when
that.
A custom, when a man is dying.
And I do believe now.
I knew you would.
Oh, God.
That Bigfoot Bank in Georgia.
Chuck it down the Bigfoot Bound in Georgia.
Okay, and that's our public service
announcement.
That's right, and here's our public service commercial announcement for the next 60 seconds. Enjoy the comedy rabbit thingy.
A rabbit genetically modified and bred with a panther.
Mm-hmm.
A rabbit genetically modified and bred with a panther. With turbines attached. A rabbit / panther with turbines, backed by an unusually strong tailwind on ice. The rabbit panther thingy with turbines and tailwind on ice. Shaved with a Cold Forge High Glide surgical grade razor.
Woohoo!
The whole rabbit panther turbine tailwind hairless razor scenario. Driven by an over-caffeinated fighter pilot.
That's
with
right.
A lead foot. all traveling down a ski jump in Switzerland under better than ideal conditions.
This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio coming to you live on blogtalkradio.com.
God darn, after 2 weeks off, I haven't lost my touch. I can still hit the mouse button reasonably straight.
All right.
You know something, Kat? We got to do a Bigfoot show. We've been talking about it. I mean, it's the time of the year people are starting to see the big guy. We got to give him some airtime here. And I'm sure there's no other paranormal shows doing anything on Bigfoot, but we're going to do it.
No, well, one of the reasons why we see him this time of year is because Bigfoot migrates between right up around Canada and makes its way down. I believe, because I've been – now, one story that I will tell you about that, and I'll say it again if we ever do a Bigfoot show, is I've been up the Natchez Trail, which is a really old trail that was used by the pioneers to go from California up to, well, what is now Canada, which back then would have been the Northern Territory. Now, you can go up the Natchez Trail. You can still see the wagon wheel indents where they used to use this trail, but it's used now by four-wheelers, and it's very rugged. And if you go up the Natchez Trail, you can see Bigfoot tracks.
Wow.
And so I believe that Bigfoot uses this Natchez Trail as kind of a highway, if you will, between the states. It's way out in the middle of freaking nowhere. It's surrounded by huge trees. There's rivers that run kind of by it. You have to drive across the river to get to the start of, well, where we start going up the Natchez. You have to go across this. It's not deep, but there's a river. So that would be its salmon, you know, content. Plus there's all kinds of bushes and berries and animals and deer and what have you, the deeper you get up there. But I have a reason to believe that Bigfoot uses the Natchez Trail. And this would be the time of year when they would migrate, so.
You know, what's funny is because I grew up in a little town called Paradise, which is just out of about 18 miles northeast of Chico in Butte County. And, between Sacramento, and Roseville, where I spent quite a bit of my childhood, and then every weekend I'd be up running around the mountains up in Paradise with my grandparents and our other house there. And we were always on these trails where it turned out that very little known fact is that the National Forest System basically had they had roads, but they also had these trails, and they were like the highway system of the forest, where people would walk these trails between communities, these little mountain hamlet-type places. And they thought nothing of walking 20 miles in a day. That was nothing to them. You know, they were really in shape, and they did. And there's old remnants of that all left around. So I'm not surprised that you would say that about, Bigfoot taking advantage of, these big, these older, remnant trails, and probably even the big cuts where they have, like, the power lines. You know, you've got those big, giant straight cuts. Those would be a natural highway, too, for them. Just any place remote where there's just not a lot of people, but it would ease their passage through. You can see that being, the real case there. So, we ought to, I'll tell you what, I'd really like to do a show on that in the coming several weeks here. If I can squeeze it in, we'll put something together. I'll get with you afterwards, and we'll work that out.
Well, if I can get with my four-wheeling buddies, we'll go up the Natchez Trail. We went up about 65, 70 miles up the Natchez, and it's wide enough for a Bronco to navigate. I mean, it's a fairly wide trail road type thing. But along the trail, there's little signs. Oh, look at this house. This used to be this. And of course, we're more interested in finding the mud holes. But you go up the Natchez, you get a feeling you're being watched. That's definite, and it's not a human.
Yeah, I know the I know what you're talking about. My mother and I have talked about some of the. There were times as a kid when I was up in Paradise where we would have these. You'd come back from fishing and you wouldn't talk about it much until later when you're cleaning your fish and you'd say, you know, I got the feeling I was being watched, and my mother would say, well, it was probably a cougar, probably a bear.
Well, like
and
that one time you were telling us about when, you know, you thought something was in the woods, crouched down, staring at you.
Yeah, and that's how I felt, and she tried to explain it away, and I'm going, you know, I don't think you get it. You know, I kind of know when an intelligent being is staring at me. You know, you know how the hackles on your neck kind of raise, and you're just, you know, it's intelligent thing looking at you, and you could just feel it. That was the feeling I got from that. So, and I, oddly enough, I was just on a Bigfoot site the other day looking, and there were quite a few sightings in Butte County over the years, although it's decreased somewhat. But still quite a few over in Trinity, you know, and that's where Trinity is, where the, all the way out to the coast is where, you know, that's Bigfoot Central here in this state. But anyway, so we'll look into doing that. If you do decide you're going to go on that trip, let me know. I'd like to know what happens.
Oh, the Natchez is the bomb for. Well, you know, we don't go up the Natchez Trail when it's wintertime because, good Lord, you're going to slip and fall and go down the cliff. But it's the summertime, and we figure that I've always thought that the Bigfoot migrate right up through. California into Washington and right up through Canada during this time of year, because now up here in Washington the salmon start to run around September, and so that's prime time for Bigfoot to be standing alongside the river scooping up their dinner.
Well, it makes sense that you could start taking a look at the highways that, you know, you're, if you want to call them that, those kind of highways, and start mapping that against the different seasonal foods are available, and that's kind of something that you're starting to see. I saw something like that on the Monster Quest show, where they were talking about they just missed having they were having Bigfoot that were attacking this cabin, and this one year the weather got a little screwy, and they were sighting them 100 miles south because the food sources hadn't really gotten, you know, fully going yet, and so the Bigfoot were staying away. And they actually flew down and ran into some tracks and stuff, but they were hoping that they'd have be able to, you know, goad it into an attack on the cabin again and film it. So hopefully this year maybe we'll get some news that they finally got someplace with it. But here we go into the All American Show. Kind of what stimulated this is, you know, this month is kind of special because for, you know, a number of reasons. Number one being, you know, here we are on a 233
years.
233 years old, this country, since 1776. So, you know, a lot of just great things have happened in this country because of, you know, what our founding fathers did, and they created these great documents that stand the test of time. And hopefully they'll stand even this current situation we're in, but that's, you know, something to really be said, you know, is that these guys led extraordinary lives and went through a lot of pain, and some of them are still wandering around, and we have many cases here. We can just breeze through. I kind of see this as just a tour de force show where we'll talk about some of that, and if people want to, you know, pipe up and say something in the chat rooms or ask questions, feel free to, or call. Give us a call at the call-in number, 646-478-0377. If you have your Skype phone out or something like that, it's all free call. Anyway, we're going to just take a moment to talk about a Hollywood figure who I've actually run into in the afterlife. And then we'll move on into the Washington, Ghosts of Washington, and then we'll do a little bit of just kind of trip through some of the candidates that we have from Hollyweird. And kind of end it with a few shady characters, ending up in all places, Las Vegas. So with that, I have a quote here, and I'll just read this off. And it starts with, "What the average man calls death, I believe merely to be the beginning of life itself. We simply live beyond the shell. We emerge from out of its narrow confines like a chrysalis. why call it death? Or if we give it, the name death, why surround it with dark fears and sick imaginings? I am not at all afraid of the unknown. And this is from Rudolph Valentino's diary.
Mm-hmm.
And give a little brief bio about Rudolph and some of the things that have happened with Rudolph and, since his death. Rudolph was one of the great romantic idols of Hollywood during the silent movie era, and his career was cut short when he died about the age of 31 from complications from an ulcer, of all things. And immediately after he died, there was there were sightings of him at his home on the grounds of Hollywood, and to this day, he is said to be Hollywood's most active ghost. And he's been spotted in a number of places, often in his former mansion called the Falcon's Lair, where his image has been seen on the second floor and in the stables. One stable worker, after having seen Valentino petting his favorite horses, promptly quit his job and never returned. He's also been spied at his beach house in Oxnard and in Santa Maria Inn, at the Santa Maria Inn in Santa Maria, where he's been known to continuously knock and the door and plays around with the door and reclines on the bed. Now, that's actually room 210 in the Santa Maria, and that's where I actually ran into this guy. It was one of my, it was like my third investigation ever, and I specifically booked room 210, got there, set up, and I started doing EVP readings, and I was getting EVPs that were just going crazy in this room. And when you stand in front of the door to room 210, and close your eyes, you'll feel like you're on the ocean. And it's and if you stand 2 or 3 feet either side of that door, there's no such feeling. And when you walk inside, it becomes much more pronounced. And the bed was positively radiating these energies. And I hear sirens.
I live 40 miles from Mount Rainier, and we have kind of a fire going on, so.
Okay.
You'll have to you'll have to excuse the sirens.
Okay, and but it ended up that the way I had when I got we got there to get the room, I was with a motorcycle tour group, and I kind of surreptitiously grabbed that room, and they accidentally screwed it up and gave it to two of the members of the party I was with, and I had to wheel and deal to get it back. And when I and they asked me why I wanted this room so bad, and I said, well, you get, and I finally leveled with them what was going on, and they said, that's why we heard that. And I says, what? And Mike, the guy, you know, it's the guy I work with, Mike says, hey man, we were hearing banging on the wall, and we were trying to figure out what it was. And I just smiled, and I was going, okay, it's going to be a great place, you know. So I set up, you know, video recorders, did some EVP work. I managed to get one EVP with the word sleep said really loudly. Sleep. Nothing else was said the whole time, and I went through like 6 hours of audio. One EVP, I finally said I've had it. I'm giving up because I just didn't feel much going on. And I go to, I turn the recorder off, and at the very end, it says sleep, and it's this other guy's voice. And so I felt really good about that, but I woke up twice in the middle of the night to see, like, a dark shape standing there next to the bed, and I felt the bed moving, like it was rocking slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot up out of bed, and then it was gone. You turn the light on, and there was nothing there, and so the first time, that's what happened. The second time, I laid there, and I kind of cocked my eye open and watched it, and it was there quite a while, and then suddenly it just was gone. And the bed was actually, you could feel the bed moving, and it was just strange. It was very strange. But I ended up sleeping in and got a call by my, you know, the bikers I was with, and they called me and said, hey, it's time to get up. You know, what are you doing, sleepyhead? So I get up. I grabbed all my stuff, slammed everything into the equipment, all into the boxes and everything, and started to get out of there. And I went, you know, I got to take a spot reading. So I grabbed the EMF meter, and I check, and there's absolutely zero EMF in the room. Now, the night before, I'd had threes and fours all over the place. And then I stood in the doorway, and I thought, well, I'll try the same experiment. I stood in the doorway, no feelings at all of any rocking or ocean movement kind of feeling, like I talked about before, just a very ordinary hotel hallway. So whatever this is, it's definitely an evening type haunt, and I guess he seems to like that particular area to come to at night. And we did this in July of 07. This was not too long before my dad's stroke, where I just had gotten back a couple of days in August, and that's August 5th, and then August 7th, he had the stroke. So that was just before that, all that occurred. So it was a while before I could analyze the evidence, but when I analyzed a bunch of it and started really going through what had happened, it was definitely interesting, and I really feel that this was Valentino, because it was his... some of the reason he stayed there, I guess he had a fondness for that community for whatever reason. And he liked to do his practice. I think his practice, his various lines and different things he did for the movies that he did and acting that he did, he liked to practice there. And it was a quiet place for him to go. So he really favored it, and I guess he liked the town. So it's a beautiful hotel, so I recommend to anybody there, if you do get the chance and you're in that area, reserve room 210 is the room, and you'll definitely find it very very interesting. There's also, with regard to Rudy...
He walks Paramount Studios, doesn't he?
Yeah, it says here, that's what I was just going to get to. The chic shimmering form is also seen floating among the costume department at Paramount Studios, roaming the catwalks above Studio 5.
Mm-hmm.
He's also been sighted near his resting place in the Cathedral Mausoleum at Hollywood Forever Memorial Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's the guy that had the woman who would come and bring roses to him for all those years.
No, that's Marilyn Monroe.
Oh.
Joe DiMaggio did that, and after he died, he made sure that there was enough funds in a special account for fresh roses to be at her mausoleum site for eternity, and to this day they still have, there's still two fresh red roses every week on her mausoleum front.
Well, there was one of the Hollywood greats had a woman in black who was seen every day going and standing before his tomb, and I think it was Rudolph, and it had like a mystery about it, and evidently it was one of his past lovers or I'd have to look it up, but I think it was Rudy, and she was real dedicated. I mean, that's true love, you know. You hang out all day with this person who is part of your life, but he's dead. That said, let's jump into the all-American part of this, and since Rudy was American, and I've actually met him, he got first chance at being on the show. So to Rudolph Valentino, thank you for a memorable haunt. It was really a pleasure to meet you. So to Rudy, you're welcome up here in Shingle Springs anytime. I'm sure you don't even know where that's at. So let's look at some of the ghosts of American history. And then we're going to start with a quintessential one, is Benjamin Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
He was instrumental in laying the government's foundation for the United States when it was first established. He modeled the United States on a whole variety of cultures, including Indian culture and society, traditional British government forms, and then kind of innovative forms he just invented, out of the blue. Some people have reported that the Philosophical Society statue over in the Philosophical Society Library in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, has a statue of Franklin that's been seen dancing along the streets. And I'm not sure the statue itself is actually dancing across the streets, but it's obviously, Franklin's ghost is seen actually maneuvering around there. So if you're interested in that, hit the show page. I made a couple of changes on our website. If you go to our GRI website and click on the big radio microphone there, it'll take you to the show page, and you'll see the links for some of these stories here that I got this from. But he had a kind of an occult past, too, and he traveled extensively between America and Britain, and he spent a lot of his time kind of creating the havoc as much as he could between Britain and America so he could get the split going. And he wasn't entirely successful on his own, but, you know, you got to give him credit. He was a hell of a rabble-rouser, you know. But he actually visited the Hells Club in Britain. They had, like, a couple of those. I think Caps did an episode. He was actually present at one of those gatherings, or maybe several. But you got to wonder what the guy was into, you know?
Oh, the Hellfire Caves. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Hellfire Caves. So, yeah, it was just, I mean, that guy got around, you know? So who knows what places he may be haunting, but definitely if you've ever been to Independence Hall and you see the people who play him walking around, it's kind of an eerie thing to see that. You know, they get some people that look, you know, spot on. But I would wonder how many times he's been seen around Independence Hall. You know, that was such a part of his life. Betsy Ross, how much do you know about her, Kat?
I know that Betsy Ross is rumored to be the one who stitched the original American flag, but that is not the case. I do know that her ghost is seen in Washington, D.C. She certainly was a part of American history. I think that the person that you are most likely to get a bead on would be Abraham Lincoln.
That's coming up, as a matter of fact. Yeah, but Betsy, although you're right about the American flag, I think she did the Don't Tread on Me flag, if I'm remembering that correctly. Not quite the American flag that we know today, but you know, she was instrumental in that. She's buried on the property at her home in Philadelphia, of all things. I did not realize that until I got into doing this show. I learned a lot when I put these shows together. She's buried on the property and is often seen crying. And then there's also evidently school children who come into there once a year and do kind of an all-American celebration for her, find little gifts and things left for them in the strangest places, and there's sightings of her with regard to that. So she's, you know, an all-American ghost that's, you know, seen fairly regularly. So if you happen to be in Philadelphia and you get a chance, go over there and ask about it. Who knows? And maybe do an investigation and see what you turn up. And there's a link here, Betsy Ross HTML. It's yeah, if you just hit our page, you'll see the link and just go on down there. Aaron Burr, third vice president under Thomas Jefferson, not so much known for that as he is for his duel with Alexander Hamilton. And he killed Hamilton in the duel, and Burr was placed on trial for treason but was acquitted. So, you know, our politicians are offing each other in the early part of U.S. history. You wonder if that could happen again. You know, maybe they could all fight each other, and then whoever survives, you know, can, you know, control the government. That would actually be kind of cool. Today Burr is said to haunt the one by land, two if by sea restaurant. You're laughing about
me. Yeah,
people
know how we feel about that, John.
I know, trust me. If they would just, you know what, if they would just all go on a long vacation for about, 100 years, I think things would just work themselves out without anybody at the helm trying to help.
Well,
everything.
we American public would foot the bill anyway, so why not?
Well, yeah, we're going to pay for all this, this boondoggles, but you got to wonder if these guys are going to end up haunting well into the future and what they're going to have to say for themselves after 100 years. But anyway, Burr is said to haunt the one if by land, two if by sea restaurant in New York City, and located what was once Burr's Carriage House at 17 Barrow Street. Both visitors and staff alike have observed dishes that fly out of the cabinets on their own accord and have had chairs pulled away from them by unseen hands. Also said to haunt the restaurant is Burr's daughter, Theodosia Burr Alston, who vanished off the coast of North Carolina en route to visit her father in New York. And evidently there's quite a story behind that, but I'll let you guys find that out after at the link that you can pick up more, but we'll move on to the next guy, the one who's seen, who is the one most seen of all the presidents, Kat?
Abraham Lincoln.
You got it, Honest Abe. And he is has been seen by queens, by other presidents, felt by people in the White House, all sorts of strange occurrences that go with him. Lincoln was a believer in the supernatural and was known not to only haunt the White House, but several sites in Springfield, Illinois, where his political career began. And famous occupants of the White House, including President Theodore Roosevelt, First Lady Grace Coolidge, and I believe the Queen of Denmark, of all things, reported seeing a tall, gaunt figure in several rooms of the residence. Others who have been walking by the White House have reported seeing a shadow of Lincoln's dimensions in the window of the Oval Office, where the president often stood gazing at the Potomac River during the days of the Civil War. And in Springfield, Illinois, Lincoln's spirit is most often linked with his tomb in Oak Ridge Cemetery. So, I thought he was buried in D.C. I didn't realize he was buried. You know what? That was right. They had a train that took him across the country. That's right.
His body was so actually stolen.
I heard about that. I heard there
was.
Did they ever get it back?
Mm-hmm. They had to move him, and they think that by some surmise that because of the plot and because they had to move him, he is he's not resting, and he will for eternity make sure that his body stays where it is now.
Yeah,
so he's buried under the state capitol, or the capitol building, under the rotunda.
Oh, so they got him under eternal security.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Because I remember what I read about the theft of the body was that the last people that looked at him said he looked, after all those years, looked relatively intact.
Uh-huh.
It was recognizably, you know, Lincoln, but they figure that the body is deteriorated from all the handling and things that have happened to it since, you know. So, but he, you know, he had that strange dream that foretold his own death, and his wife, I guess Mary, was really into spiritualism. So they were a pretty enlightened bunch, similar to the Reagans, I think. You know, the Reagans were very much aware of, you know, just alternate realities and things like that.
You know, I also have thought, now maybe I can get your opinion on this. Lincoln was president of the United States back during a rather large historical upheaval. He freed the slaves. He did his Emancipation Proclamation speech. He was president during the war. And I have a theory that all of the Civil War dead have created such an attractive energy for each other to come together for eternity that Lincoln has actually attached himself to this energy. And that's one of the driving forces why he still walks around the earth, is because because he was president in such a turbulent time.
I would agree. I mean, he held it together against all odds. I mean, here's this one man's will against another man's will fighting him to split the country in two, and he managed to just keep it together. And at times when his generals were all incompetent and he was having to, you know, show incredible patience. As a matter of fact, one thing about Lincoln that I remember reading it from, you know, history class was that he had a few generals he was furious with, and he wrote scathing letters to them, but he never sent them. And after he was dead, these letters came to light in his desk, and you know, they finally, you know, it showed kind of the character of the man, because you could see his thought process. You know, he got it out of his system, got it on paper, and then he figured out, okay, that's not going to do anything good. Let's put it away and work with the situation. And that's, to me, an enlightened mind at work. You know, I mean, you could see into the guy's soul where he's coming from. And you know, so when I think of Lincoln, I think of that, and I tip my hat to him, because, you know, we've all been in situations in life where, you know, you're just things aren't going well and, you know, you want to lash out, but you can't, you know, you have to just get up and keep moving. And
well,
there's the inspiration
little things
right
about
there.
Lincoln was, you know, he went right out into the battlefields. I mean, he went right out there to talk to the generals numerous times. So
and they tried to kill him. The Confederate soldiers, they had sharpshooters trained off him, and they just, the rifles weren't all that good. You know, thank God they didn't have the kind of technology we have today. But yeah, he was a gutsy guy. I mean, he deserves that rotunda he's in, you know, or the Lincoln Memorial in D.C. Every bit of that.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I mean, yeah, I've been there, and it's just.
I have too.
It's just awesome. You walk up to that, and you see, you know, the spirit there, and you could feel it. And I'm sure he haunts that too.
Him and Washington both.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and yeah, Washington himself, you know, although he's not seen as often as Lincoln is, but I believe there are reports of Washington being seen in different places. But it's funny. The other thing too with Lincoln is he seems to show up when the United States is in real trouble, and you got to wonder what's going on in our White House right now. With all the stuff going on, what he's thinking right now if he is showing up.
Him and that black cat.
That black cat. I've heard of that black cat under the Capitol.
He's
right?
In the basement of the White House.
Oh, okay. Because I heard it was under the Capitol, but it's a black cat that's a snarling, evil thing. Is what I heard it was, and it's seen when things get really crazy.
Yep.
In this country, and what have you heard about it?
Well, I know that it has shown up before the Vietnam War. It showed up before the Korean War. I believe it's a credible story because I believe that animals can manifest themselves to warn people, just as maybe your favorite dog would do in life. But I also have a firm belief that it would be up to the people that work there to tell us, you know, oh, hey, I just saw, you know, that black cat. But if nobody says anything, do we know if anybody, if it even appeared during certain events? It would be up to whoever was in the basement to come up and say, oh, my God, I just saw that black cat.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what to think. I mean, it just why a cat? Why the cat? I mean, of all things. Although it's funny, kind of you know about the layout of Washington, don't you? I mean, the design of it is.
You're
going to
hear some sirens in a minute. I apologize. Maybe
yeah,
not.
No problem. I'm trying to. My console just blew up here on Blog Talk, so I'm just trying to grab my console back.
You know, in fact, they did some research. On all of the, they started with, okay, all the presidents and what kind of animals have they had? And what color were they? None of the presidents have ever owned a black cat.
Huh.
So where this black cat is actually coming from is still kind of a mystery. I mean, if it was a Cocker Spaniel or something, they could say, oh, well, you know, Theodore Roosevelt owned a Cocker Spaniel. So maybe it's him, but nobody's ever owned a black cat.
Yeah, I mean,
the Clintons owned a cat named Sox, but it was black and white.
Yeah, and this cat's been seen for quite a long time, I take it.
This cat's been seen since the late 1800s down there another theory might be that when the White House burned down during the war, when it was torched, it's possible that the cat died with the White House, and it now comes back to warn of imminent danger.
That's actually a good theory. I like that.
That's my own personal theory. Don't think.
Okay.
But when it burned down, it's possible that there was an animal. That did not survive, that survives to this day as a kind of an angel of mercy, so to speak.
Well, I'll tell you what. With that, we'll leave that and take a, we're a little bit over our break time, but we're going to take a brief break and come back, and we'll kind of breeze through a few of the Hollywood ghosts, and then we'll end the show. So we'll just take a brief break, and Kat, say the famous words.
Everybody go pee.
Okay, here we go. And a little Southern music. Here we go.
The ants go marching two by two, hurrah, hurrah. The ants go marching two by two, the last one stops, tie his shoe, and they all go marching down under the ground to get out of the rain. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Man. The ants go marching three by three, the last one stops, he scrapes his knee, and they all go marching down under the ground to get out of the rain.
Okay, and with that, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. We're back, and
that's
we're talking
right.
about All-American Ghosts, and what we've been talking about is everything from apparitions haunting the White House, the ghost cats screaming at people under the White House, Ben Franklin haunting caves up in Britain in the Hellfire Caves. But we're working on, and even a little bit of Rudolph Valentino dropping by to say hi to yours truly in room 210 of the Santa Maria Inn. But we're going to move on to Orson Welles here, considered to be one of Hollywood's greatest directors and a fine actor, writer, and producer. He died of a heart attack in Hollywood at age 70 on October 10th, 1985. And he's a man who, if you've seen him, you know he loved to eat. And his spirit continues to be seen at Sweet Lady Jane's restaurant, known for its great food and exquisite desserts. Both customers and staff have reported seeing Welles' caped apparition sitting at his favorite table, and additionally, the smell of his favorite brandy and cigars often accompany these sightings. So if you happen to ever be at that restaurant, take a look and say hi to Orson. You know, and he actually fixed watches and did different things kind of similar to some of the other, I can't remember the guy's name, Uri Geller. Uri Geller and him seemed to kind of go on the same thing. They would appear on The Tonight Show, and I remember Orson did this thing where he said, okay, I'm going to think about this, fixing your broken watches, and if you go open your cabinets up where you've got your watches that are not running, they will be running. And sure enough, I walked up to a cabinet where I know there was these watches that were broken, opened them up, and one of them was actually sitting there ticking. And I was just at a loss to explain it. Oddly enough, it was in the house that I was marooned at for 3 months, haunted by my parents while I was going through my really tough time in life and needed to be humbled by, and I did get humbled. That said, let's move on to Red Fox. And he actually had the big heart attack on stage. You know, one of his running gags was he was going to have the big one, and he actually had the heart attack, and people were laughing, thinking that he was joking when he actually did have the heart attack. And he had gone through quite a bit of stress in a battle with the Internal Revenue Service over a dispute with them. Lost his house, I believe in Las Vegas. And now the new owner of the house reportedly saw Fox's apparition walking around in a bathrobe. And there's also doors and lights that turn themselves off and on and open and close. And a sliding glass door that was constantly opening of its own accord. But the guy changed out the door and put a regular, just a regular door in, and now that door opens itself and closes itself just kind of in defiance. So they finally just gave up and let him do what he's going to do. So, you know, to Red Fox, hey, buddy, you know, just keep doing that because it's great fun to see that happening. Lucille Ball, of all people, she died after surgery in 1989 at age 77. And she was still living at her home at 100 North Roxbury Drive in, Hollywood someplace. Since her death, she's said to remain in a home that experiences a number of strange happenings. New owners tell of unexplained broken windows, loud voices being heard from an empty attic, and furniture and other objects moving around inside the home.
Mm-hmm.
So to this day, this is still a happening occurrence. And if you happen to be out on www.findadeath.com, take a look for that at that, and look up Lucille Ball, and you'll have the full story. There's quite a bit more to it. It's a very interesting story, but
she had a brain embolism.
Yeah, and it let go. They thought they had it, and she died like within minutes when the thing went south on them, and it was just they thought they'd saved her, and it turned out she was doomed, you know, from the beginning. Let me skip on down to some of the folks that people know here.
You know, another place that these people are seen was a place called Ciro's, which is now the Comedy Club.
You know, I've been in the Comedy Club, and that place has an energy to it. It's all its own, and that was actually a gangland hideout.
Mm-hmm.
And a place where they did business. They would take people down below and kill them.
It was called Ciro's.
And it was, you go down, people say when they go down to that basement that there's some stuff that happens down there that's unreal, and a lot of people won't go down alone. It's just a really bad energy down there. So I think some of the stories of up on the actual show place, though, itself on the stage, are that there are times when the chairs will stack themselves. Somebody will turn, look at the stage, it'll be one way, turn back, and here's all these chairs will be stacked together in unusual, in almost impossible configurations, and they'll be perfectly balanced. And and people just get unnerved as hell by it. I know I would be. I mean, that's just loony. I mean, how could they possibly have that kind of precision? And I mean, that's almost like practice movements. I mean, do they sit around all day thinking, "I'm going to screw with these poor, you know, living people, and we'll get a bunch of us together and form a review that does this, and everybody will clap," you know? I don't know. I mean, that's dedication to a haunt. I mean, you literally have to be a bit of a showman to do those kind of haunts, you know. Let's see, Lon Chaney. The Phantom of the Opera guy, Lon Chaney Sr., remembered primarily as a pioneer actor of horror films during the silent film era. He died in 1930, and today his spirit is said to haunt Soundstage 28 at Universal Studios. Now, I don't know if that's actually open for the public to view, but I know Universal Studios does have a lot of tours, so if that's something that you could ever get to, check that out. This stage was used for the film Phantom of the Opera, and Chaney's Cape Spirit has been seen running along the catwalks above the stage. Other phenomena reported to occur here are lights that turn off and on and doors that go open and close by themselves. And that's on the MSNBC.com link. So if you go into our page, you'll get that. There's a link to that. Montgomery Clift, a popular film star of the 1950s and 60s, he was a four-time Oscar-nominated actor who's best known for his roles in A Place in the Sun, From Here to Eternity, Judgment at Nuremberg, and films like that. His spirit has been seen at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. Now, I've heard a lot of activity at the Roosevelt Hotel, including Marilyn Monroe, who's seen, I think, there. But this guy is seen in room 928. So if you happen to get that room, you might run into Montgomery. It's here he spent 3 months in 1953 when he was known to pace back and forth memorizing his lines for the film From Here to Eternity. And today, unexplained loud noise is heard coming from the otherwise empty suite. Phone is continually found to be off the hook, and unexplainable cold spots are felt in the room. Others have sensed the actor's presence, and reportedly one guest felt an invisible hand patting her shoulder. So that's in the paranormal.about.com link tied to him under True Ghost Stories.
He also plays his trumpet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, he played that too. But it's similar to our good buddy Rudolph. Same kind of thing. This guy found that hotels were a great place to kind of get some alone time and practice lines and do things. So maybe that's kind of a trait with actors. They're putting a lot of themselves into their craft, and if they're in a particular room, it imprints there. And then who knows? Maybe they like, if it's an intelligent haunt, they like to go back because it felt so good to be there. You know. Carol Lombard, this was kind of a tragic one here. Carol Lombard was one of Hollywood's top comedy actresses in the 1930s. She married Clark Gable in 1939, and the pair was said to have had one of Hollywood's ideal marriages. However, their love was cut short when Lombard was killed in a plane crash just 3 years later. Her spirit has been seen near the suite she shared with Clark Gable at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. Both her and her beloved husband Gable allegedly haunt the Oatman Hotel in Oatman, Arizona, where they spent their honeymoon. So if you happen to be out in Arizona way, hit the Oatman, O-A-T-M-A-N Hotel. And I think that's still in existence, if memory serves right.
Mm-hmm.
So, now we've got 9 minutes left, so I'm going to just kind of bomb right into our criminal element. What would America be without criminals? Bugsy Siegel. You know, one of the most colorful Las Vegas underworld figures, Bugsy is often attributed to envisioning the sparkling city that Las Vegas is today. You never know what it's going to look like, though. They tear the place down and then change it every time I go there.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely rebuilt.
For real?
I'm not kidding. It's like completely different, you know. But there were a number of small gambling spots in Las Vegas, but nothing like the Flamingo Hotel that Siegel's opened in 1946. And the mob basically financed it, but it took a lot more to get it going than they had anticipated, and they figured that Bugsy was skimming from them, and so they had him killed in Beverly Hills on June 20th, 1947, and he was shot a couple times in the head. So he's known to haunt that mansion over in Beverly Hills. And witnesses have reported seeing the apparition of a man running and ducking across the living room of the house, only to disappear as suddenly as he came. He also lurks about the Flamingo Hotel, which I think still exists, appearing nattily dressed in a smoking jacket with a wide smile on his handsome face. Most often he's seen in the presidential suite at the hotel, which was his home for many years. He's also been spied in and around the Rose Garden of the wedding chapel area. So, hey, Bugsy, way to go. We all love Vegas. Jesse James, getting into a little bit closer to home here. Jesse was originally buried in the family farm in Kearney, Missouri. However, his body was later moved to Mount Olivet Cemetery in town to be buried next to his wife. Though his remains are no longer at the farm, many believe he's never left. All kinds of strange events continually occur at the farm, such as doors that slam closed by themselves, lights that move both inside and outside of the property buildings, and an overwhelming sense that an unearthly presence lingers. Others report hearing the sounds of pounding hooves, muffled shots, and cries that are reminiscent of area history dating back to events of the Civil War. So this gets Jesse James is still about possibly hanging about, although he's buried next to his woman. Let's see, Bonnie and Clyde, and we'll finish it up with Al Capone. So Bonnie and Clyde, the pair of notorious outlaws of the 1930s, were finally tracked down and killed May 23rd, 1934, outside of Arcadia, Louisiana. Their bullet-ridden car was towed into town with their bodies still in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was like a trophy hunt. Today, a marker stands at the site where they died, and it's said to be haunted by the pair. photographs taken of that spot often come out with ghostly forms. Now, you know, that's the thing that bothers me, Kat, is if you have a violent death and you're an intelligent hunt, why would you stay in one spot? I mean, is it kind of like your job? I don't think that sounds almost residual to me, you know?
I think that's the last place where their actual human energy was last recorded, so they don't stay there, but they appear there.
Yeah, it's kind of like they pop back.
An imprint, yeah.
Yeah. Well, odd, but, you know, I wonder what else they appear in. I'm sure there's more to it than that. It'd be interesting to see, what some of those photographs might look like. Al Capone, now this guy, he's been seen in a number of places. A notorious Chicago gangster who led the city's illegal activities during the Prohibition era, rumored to haunt a couple of locations, allegedly when people are disrespectful while visiting his family plot at Mount Carmel Cemetery in Hillside, Illinois, he's said to appear. Also at Alcatraz, where Capone was one of the first inmates, spectral banjo music has often been heard coming from inside of his old cell. And I'm trying to get our group to actually get out there for a nighttime hunt. That's one case I forgot to put in our list today. I'm going to have to remember that, because when the crowds go home in September, October, I think that's the time to go out and actually hit Alcatraz. And there, he was also in another prison, I think in Philadelphia.
Eastern State.
Eastern State, yeah. I mean, they moved this guy around, you know. But I guess he had nice digs wherever they put him.
When they closed Alcatraz down, they moved him to Eastern State. Back then, Eastern State was one of the only level 5, other than Leavenworth, Kansas, penitentiaries where they could put him. And after he contracted syphilis, I believe that's where they released him from.
Yeah, he was pretty much a raving lunatic by the time they got rid of him. He was never the same after that. But
no.
Well, I never heard the one of him appearing at his family plot, though. That's Hillside, Illinois. And I'm going to have to find out more about that. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You could almost see the Ghost Adventure Square guys going out there to tick him off. By the way, you got to hear something. you remember Ghost Adventure Crew when their very first episode when they were in Virginia City?
Uh-huh.
And they went up. They went into Boot Hill Cemetery. Well, we went up there in May, and I went to the exact spot where Zach had insulted the guy who started Story County. And this guy is like kind of a fearsome character. And I asked this spirit, I said, look, was it you, really you, that took Zach and you know, pounded on those guys and chased them out of here because they were disrespectful to you? And we got a long, slow yes on the EVP. So I'm gonna clip that. I'm gonna send that to Zach and the boys and see what they think. I just want them to know we've got a confirmation on who it was that kicked your butts that first time out. So I just think that was an awesome EVP to get. So we're gonna clip that. I'll send that to you once I get it fully washed out. But it's a very good EVP. So anyway, hey, we've had a pretty good, you know, return to business kind of show here. I don't remember quite what the next show is going to be, but we're going to have in the coming months some really good guests. We've been really working hard to line up some pretty well-known folks. So you know, hang in there with us. We're going through some changes here, and to let you know, October, we're going to start doing the shows on Fridays because of all the casework we're doing with GRI and that kind of thing. So that said, Kat, why don't we do the shout-outs to make sure we get everybody. I saw Doc John out there and folks, but let's get some shout-outs going.
I've got Doc John. Thank you for coming. Dolphin Soup, thank you very much. John, yours truly, Kat, and we've got the Salmon Fritter.
Okay, well, thank you to all of you who came in to listen to the All-American Show, you know, and we're all saluting the flag right now. We'll be back next week and, you know, doing another show next Saturday, and we thank you all for always coming on to hang out with us. And we're going to be doing some amazing cases here in the next month or two, and we'll play some more good EVPs and just take it from there. So, and Kat, I don't know what you got. What's coming up Monday? You've got your show.
Brian Harnoy is on my show Monday night at 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time.
Okay, well, I'm going to be just getting off work, but is it a two-hour show?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll get home and jump on as soon as I get home from work. So that said, I want to thank everybody, and we'll just go ahead and call it an evening. And thank you for being here with us tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, Kat. And I'll pull together those EVPs and stuff and get those going. So, hey, thanks a lot. And hey, that's a good catch getting Brian.
Thanks.
Yeah, good work. So, and the Bigfoot show, let me look at what's looking like here.
Can these guys hear us?
Oh, they'll hear us at the end, but we can, I think we can, they can suffer the slings and arrows of hearing us on the archive show. Let's see. I've got, okay, we got Sharon Coyle coming on next week. And Gloria Young, and after that, Todd Wolf. So we got a bunch of them lined up. But, you know, why don't we do a special show on Bigfoot on the 25th?
The 25th of August?
Yeah, the 25th
okay.
of July. That works for me. Let me look at the calendar. Because I've got to move some things around. I've been getting the calendar rescheduled here. So, yeah, we're going to be doing a hunt at the Sierra Nevada House on the 24th.
Uh-huh.
And so the 25th, yeah, that works. So we'll do the 25th. We'll do just two shows, and I'll set that up right after this. And let's do a Bigfoot show. I'm up for that. So if
okay.
you want to pull together whatever you can about your theories on the many travels of Bigfoot on the trails, on the old Pioneer trails, I think that's a great topic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, then we'll put it together. Sound like a deal?
All right. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Okay. All right. So anyway, I'm going to head off, and thanks for being there for the show. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. Well, I'll talk with you later.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.